welcome, believers. This is Lucha Lowdown. I am your host and El Jefe of this podcast, James Kincaid. With me tonight, as always, El Pendejo Jeff Budd.
It's important that we keep our spirits up, James.
Welcome back, Jeff. El Guapo, Pendejo. I don't know what you are anymore. But welcome back to Lucha Lowdown.
Those are Spanish words that you're using.
They are.
I'm getting better. I'm making progress.
Both fitting, too. If the shoe fits, wear it. Welcome back to Lucha Lowdown. Lucha Underground is in their mid-season break. They're hibernating. So we are continuing on as they air what they're calling their greatest hits. We're going to keep rewatching them, traveling back in time with Lucha Underground and revisiting some of their best moments. So that's what we're going to get into tonight. They aired Aztec Warfare and Grave Consequences from Season 1, two phenomenal episodes. So we're going to break down those in a moment. But we do have some newsworthy items as well to talk about and just some things to kick out there. I want to start first with what could potentially be a major storyline for Lucha Underground moving forward, and that is the fact that Pentagon Jr., posted via Facebook that he has left AAA and he is essentially a free agent. I'm going to paraphrase this. He wrote it in Spanish and then this website translated it, and I don't think they translated it exactly right. So I'm going to paraphrase it. He said, "Hello to everyone, because today, I belong to the company AAA, and today I become a fully independent wrestler. And to clarify, my new name is Penta." And he just put the zero and the M. So I don't know if it's Penta Cero Miedo or just Penta Cero M. I'm not sure, but I think it's probably going to be Penta Cero Miedo because I guess AAA owns Pentagon Jr. And I was unsure if that's why Lucha Underground changed his name to Pentagon Dark in the first place.
Yeah, I remember you speculated about that.
Yeah, and AAA and Lucha Underground are very closely affiliated, or at least they were when they first started. So I am not sure if they would even force that change. Maybe they just wanted to do it. Lucha Underground did recently have an announcement as well that if you want to speculate about what this maybe means for Pentagon and everything like that, AAA's involvement with Lucha Underground, they sent us a press release. Dorian Pena has been named the general manager of Lucha Libre FMV. In this role, Pena will oversee the day-to-day operations of Lucha Libre FMV LLC, which owns the intellectual property of Lucha Underground and the intellectual property of Lucha Libre AAA outside of Mexico. So his responsibilities include oversight of live events, talent relations, sponsorships, merchandising, licensing, etc. He will also continue on in his current role as the EVP, which is Enterprise Development for Lucha Libre AAA. He will report to the members of Lucha Libre FMV LLC. So they are appointing somebody, general manager of Lucha Libre FMV, which owns the intellectual property that is Lucha Underground worldwide, somebody who also has very close ties to AAA. So the reason why I bring that up is because with this news of Pentagon leaving AAA, how will that affect Pentagon moving forward beyond Season 3 and everything like that? We just don't know. There have been luchadors who have left AAA that have stayed in Lucha Underground, to name a few, Pentagon's brother Phoenix left, and he is certainly is one of the big stars in Lucha Underground. However, you can sort of speculate that maybe he is not being as heavily featured in Season 3 thus far. Is that a reason because he left AAA? I don't know, and I don't know how much AAA would actually lean on Lucha Underground, how much they would actually kowtow to that, because knowing the good people of Lucha Underground, they have a vision, and it seems like they want to stick to that and would not sort of be affected by that, but you never know.
And his story seems to be setting up, though, too.
Yeah, it's true, and it's ramping up.
It's a long season.
Absolutely. But other people that have left, Jack Evans, Sexy Star. Sexy Star became champion this season, so...
And her and Jack have been in most episodes.
Yeah, absolutely. So these are not, hard and fast things that maybe now Pentagon will be on the outs with Lucha Underground. There's been speculation. I really can't speak to it, but I have heard speculation online that a lot of the performers are not happy with how they get treated in AAA. Again, I cannot speak directly to that. I mean, AAA is one of the biggest promotions in the world, and certainly in Mexico with CMLL. So I did think it was interesting to note, though. And so he will no longer be Pentagon Jr. When he wrestles independently. And the other side of this is that I think his name has gotten so big in America that now he can book a lot more around the United States and make more money, which is great for Pentagon and it's great for his brand. It sucks that he can't use the Pentagon Jr. name. But, for instance, I'm going to go see him in February here in San Francisco. So very much so looking forward to that. But, yeah, Jeff, your thoughts?
Well, yeah, the way I always looked at their relationship, and obviously I don't know anything, I'm just an observer on the outside, is I always thought that if they wanted to do more in the United States, that would be more under the Lucha Underground banner, or, you know, just any of the independents and things like that. I hope AAA doesn't think of Lucha as, like, trying to poach any of its talent or anything of that nature.
No, I don't think they would think
since that. Since they are still linked.
Yeah, I don't think they would think that, because I think a lot of the capitalizing on the popularity of Lucha Underground is, it's not with by being in Lucha Underground and just staying there. It's by being in Lucha Underground and capitalizing it in independent promotions and elsewhere and stuff like that. So yep. I don't think they would view it that way. One of these articles correctly points out that, you know, while other stars have left the promotion, again, like we said before, Sexy Star, Jack Evans, Phoenix, and Conan, I don't think any of them were as popular as Pentagon. And so it remains to be seen what effect that will have. And probably to Pentagon's favor, honestly, because he is the most over star in Lucha Underground. So I don't think, no matter what, they really want to sort of tax. I mean, I don't think they want to tax Pentagon. But I do think it is interesting. So, I mean.
Well, maybe that just means more American exposure I guess is how I'm going to take it. And if we are talking about Lucha Underground becoming, I mean, basically a full-time promotion, if they want to film season four the way they've been talking about, then he doesn't really have time to fight for AAA. A lot of these guys don't.
Yeah.
So hopefully what they're doing right now is starting to tie people up and get them locked down so that we can have quality stories and they can be, you know, consistent talent that we see on a regular basis.
It is something interesting to watch. And there's a promoter that I know of that had wanted to book Pentagon in the past and, you know, had been sort of felt like he had been screwed over by AAA and preventing Pentagon from performing, posted a photo with him and just said F AAA. So, I mean, it is very interesting times that we live in and very interesting stuff going on right now with Penta, Cerro Miedo and everything that is going on there. So we will see how that story develops. And again, we don't even know where things end up in season three. And just as far as what's going to be going on with season four, but it is definitely, I think, something to consider. There's so many things coalescing around Lucha Underground as it has gained in popularity. We talked to Chris DeJoseph. No secret or surprise that WWE launched their cruiserweight division as sort of a counter to Lucha Underground, everything like that.
And it sucks.
It's not going well for them. And now there's reports going on that they are cutting the time that they're going to be getting on Raw because it is not being very well received, although the tournament was great. But
most of those guys are so generic, it hurts, you know?
But I mean, but the point
like watching white bread
is that that Lucha is getting noticed. Their talent is getting noticed. So it's there is.
Well, they better not poach.
That's what I'm worried.
His fat paychecks.
That is something that we all have to be worried about. So something to keep an eye on there. The other thing I wanted to get into also before I move on, it was first funny as I was getting ready for the show tonight and watching the greatest hits and everything like that. I had forgotten that they had Alberto Patron defend the AAA title in season one. I'd completely forgotten about that. I remember thinking it was cool that he showed up with it, but I forgot he put it on the line against Tejano in that the bull rope match. But moving on, there is one other thing I want to talk about before we get into the episodes, and that is the SAG Awards are coming up. And yours truly, as a member of SAG-AFTRA, do get a vote. It is my first time voting. And already I am kind of gumming up the works, as it were, because I requested
revoke this man's membership.
Dude, I'm kind of worried that they might take my vote away, but I don't really care because it was worth it to me to do this. Is the SAG Awards Screen Actors Guild you know, recognizing outstanding performances and everything like that in acting. I requested a paper ballot because I noticed some exclusions from the world of television that I thought should have been in there. And so I had a few write-in candidates. For best actor in a best male actor in a TV drama, I wrote in Luis Fernandez Gil, who of course plays Dario Cueto on Lucha Underground. And for best actress in a TV drama, I wrote in one Carly Perez, who plays Katrina. And then for best stunts in a TV drama, I also wrote in Lucha Underground as well. So three things that I felt like that they were overlooked on. I don't think I don't know if anything pro wrestling has ever been nominated for like an Emmy or a Golden Globe or a SAG Award, but I do think, especially in Lucha Underground's case, since it is a TV show. I mean, I certainly am enthralled more by Dario and Katrina than I am any other two characters on TV. I think they do a phenomenal job. So I just wanted to give them the nod and give them the rightful recognition that they deserve. I mean, it's a drop in the bucket. It's one guy's write-in vote, so it's not going to make any sort of difference. But I do hope that someday, you know, pro wrestling gets its due in that regard, you know?
Hey, man, every vote matters.
Thank you.
The tide turns with just one man. That's how it starts.
The thing about it is they make it as difficult for you as possible to put in any sort of write-in vote. But I'll be damned if I didn't get it.
They don't supply you with a pen? I don't understand.
No. They when you request the paper ballot, they give you like a sort of like a ballot sheet that has like all the nominees on it, and then they give you a Scantron too. So like it all corresponds to a number. So I had to create new numbers and then add them onto the ballot and add them onto the Scantron sheet too. It was a whole thing. But I am very proud to take my stand for pro wrestling and Lucha Underground in that regard. So as two members of the Screen Actors Guild are Luis Fernandez Gil and Carly Perez, they deserve some recognition. I admire and respect their work a great, great deal.
I love it, dude. Your actions have pleased the Aztec gods.
I hope so. I hope they take pity on me when they you know return to power and everything like that. Perhaps like
they need their boots licks, just like anybody else. You and Dario and Lorenzo Lamas.
Well, let's get into tonight's episodes of the sort of the Lucha Underground's greatest hits that they've been airing instead of new episodes as they are in their mid-season break. So we start with the ninth episode of season one, which is Aztec Warfare. Overall thoughts on rewatching Aztec Warfare, Jeff?
Dude, this is like a major historic moment in Lucha Underground. It's the first Aztec Warfare. Each Aztec Warfare, I was thinking about this when I was watching this episode last night, kind of has like that key moment or like something very important that you take away from it. And, I mean, this just being the first one alone, I think is sufficient enough. But then at the same time, this is where they crown their first champion. Yeah. You know, you can never take that away. I mean, that's a big monumental deal. And just thinking about, like, who it came down to, you know, it was the real leading faces of the company at the time. And it's just, you know, we talked about this last week, the walk down memory lane. Seeing who was where, how they were acting, what the storylines and the feuds were at the time. It's just interesting to me. It's fun to watch. I mean, and I was telling you, I mean, it's only been about a year that I've been watching Lucha Underground now. So it wasn't that long ago that I was marathoning these episodes. And it's just kind of fun to be able to look back and kind of highlight one episode as opposed to watching like maybe four a night or something.
Yeah, definitely. And I think they've really chosen well so far as what they're having us rewatch. And like you said, Aztec Warfare is such a historical event for Lucha Underground in so many ways. And yeah, the first champion, and just I still think it's the first Aztec Warfare. I still think it's the best installment that we've had of it. Not to say that the other ones weren't very good, but I think this one was the best.
Aztec Warfare Dos, though.
I loved it. And Rey Mysterio's involvement, Matanza, all that stuff was great.
Exactly. Those two alone.
But this to me, I think still stands the test of time. So some of the things that jumped out to me about it. Well, first of all, let's go over.
I think somebody likes Pimpinella more than they wanted to admit.
Well, you know what? That actually certainly is a knock against this one. So the entrance. So Phoenix, because of what we reviewed last time with the greatest hits, of course, had to come in at number one. Number two was Johnny Mundo by random draw, of course. And then we got Mr. Cisco. And then it was when King Cuerno came out. That, again, I'm doubling down on the fact that it's really great to see him again. He is such a great performer. It's such a cool character. I love King Cuerno. I just loved how Stryker was describing him, you know, the High Plains Drifter, you know, and like the Hunter and all this. King Cuerno is awesome. And so it was cool seeing him get involved in this. Son of Havoc was next at five, but Phoenix really started doing some great stuff. I think right around the time Cuerno came in, like he was doing all the crazy dives, and Son of Havoc came in at five and did another one himself.
Dude, Cuerno came in and just wrecked shop.
Yes, he did.
And then busted out like an arrow from the depths of hell, like within a minute of being in the ring. It was absurd.
Yeah.
Because I mean, like we said, he came in fourth. Was Cisco already gone by the time Cuerno came in? I think Mundo already pinned him. So it really was just Phoenix, Mundo, and Cuerno.
Yeah, that's
and,
right.
And he was just, I mean, to be able to hold your own against Phoenix and Mundo, you know, says something right there. And King Cuerno is definitely a tough guy, and, you know, he's a top talent. So, yeah, he goes in there, he kind of owns the ring, and then, yeah, just busts out, you know, one of his most famous moves immediately. It was terrific.
Yeah. Mr. Cisco, like you said, he was the third man in. He was the first man eliminated. He took a
the little cholo riding solo. I love it.
Yes. He was eliminated right away.
Oh, God, I hate Mr. Cisco.
And then at sixth, we got Pimpinella. And I've written down in my notes here, Pimpinella, damn it. It was eliminated.
That's what Phoenix said.
It was eliminated. Yeah, he's like kissing people and stuff like that.
He kissed Phoenix, and he tried to kiss Marty the ref. King Cuerno swings in and saves the day.
God.
The unlikely hero.
Yeah.
Dude, I was thinking, we were talking about how Mil Muertes kind of won a special place in your heart after he took out Pimpinella in that previous episode. King Cuerno was like constantly in Pimpinella's face, like for most of Aztec Warfare.
I thought about that too. I was like, man, it
I
really
was like,
makes
all your
sense.
Favorite guys do not like Pimpinella.
These are how the things were forged for me.
Yeah, no idea.
Yep, it's funny going back
it's
on rewatch. Yep. So yeah, Pimpinella was in at six. He actually stayed in for a good amount of time too.
Some would say too long.
Yeah, seven was Prince Puma. Eight was Ivelisse, and
very attractive. Ivelisse.
Yeah, Ivelisse was looking great, and it was when Ivelisse came in that Pimpinella was eliminated by Son of Havoc, so Pimpinella was the second one eliminated. And
with
then,
some help from Ivelisse.
Yes, did thanks to the assist to Ivelisse. And it was shortly thereafter that she would be eliminated by King Cuerno with a thrill of the hunt. Let's just run down the entrance. So entering at eight was Ivelisse, ninth was Drago, 10th was Bale, 11th Cortez Castro, 12th Ricky Mandel, 13 Big Rick, 14 Pentagon Jr., Cero Miedo, 15 was Superfly, 16 was how dare you scoff?
You got to have Cero Miedo to wear that that goofy first outfit of his.
Damn you.
Because real fast about Pentagon.
Yeah.
I thought about it while watching the episode. You know the old Mortal Kombats where it was actual actors that they filmed? They would. Have you ever seen like the behind-the-scenes making of those games?
No.
And the costumes, of course, look a lot crappier because they add a lot as they digitize it. He looks like the people dressed as Cyrax and Sektor.
Yeah.
No. But what the people look like in the costume in studio. It is atrocious. His costume is unacceptable. Now I remember why it took me so long to get on the Pentagon Jr. bandwagon.
Nah, man, he's awesome.
He only started to get awesome, partway through season two for me.
Disagree. Let me run down the rest of the entrance. So 15, we had Superfly, 16, Chavo, 17, Masquerita, 18, Sexy Star, 19, Mariachi Loco, and 20, Mil Muertes rounded out the field in Aztec Warfare 1. Things that jumped out to you through the course of the match, Jeff. I will start because at entrant number 14, Pentagon Jr., you may think he looked crappy, but he was kicking some serious ass when he first came in.
Dude.
The The move of the match, the move of the match to me was the backdrop powerbomb that he freaking put on Phoenix. That was absurd. I loved it. I thought he even though he didn't eliminate anyone, he acquitted himself very well.
Wait, who did he eliminate?
I said he didn't eliminate anyone.
Yeah, that's what I thought you said.
Interesting. Interesting. I have a feeling you and I are destined to do this forever. But things that jumped out to you about the match.
The move that stood out to me in this match was what basically got Drago eliminated, and it was Big Rick pressing him over his head. King Cuerno, who still was having the feud with Drago at the time, basically just waves him over. He's like, pass him to me, bro. Big Rick just passes him in the air like a damn beach ball. Cuerno catches him and then does a thrill of the hunt for the pin.
Yeah.
It was absurd.
Yeah, I like that a lot, too. Again, this is another one I think we talked about last week, is that I think Big Rick coming back to the temple would be appreciated. He was a force in there.
I miss Big Rick, and I thought that even more with the second match that was aired this week. I was just like, you know, he was a lot of fun. And he's another one of those guys where when you sold me on Lucha Lowdown to check out, Big Rick obviously wasn't one of the characters that I was interested in seeing. I'm there to see guys like Phoenix and Prince Puma and even like a Pentagon Jr. I'm there to see the more traditional luchador type wrestlers, but and King Cuerno for that matter. But yeah, Big Rick was fun. I liked him, and I liked his story, and I liked that he didn't stay with Dario. He was kind of doing his own thing. He was also just one of those, like, real characters who was there to, like, make money and wasn't really steeped in the lore or, serving up some dark god, which is nice. It's refreshing.
And I think in particular of the early going of Lucha Underground to put over that aspect of it, which is why they're all there in the first place. You know?
Well, yeah, because it's more street brawl and fighting and things like that. Yeah, makes
sense.
It's
an underground fighting ring. I was explaining it to somebody I work with here at the radio station because I was rewatching and everything like that, and I was like, "No,
you're
no,
allowed
I,
to do."
Sometimes, not often, but yeah, no. So I think Big Rick sort of put over the premise, his Mundo's presence, put over the premise of what Lucha Underground is in a lot of ways. That you know, this is an underground fighting ring. People do it to get rich,
yeah,
and to sort of apply their underground brawling tactics, and it's also steeped in Lucha Libre, and there's always that aspect of Lucha Underground that it's like, and maybe it's just because Bordello of Blood was on the other day on El Rey Network, but there's like that aspect of a lot of the non-luchadors are sort of almost like the Huckleberries of Lucha Underground that are like coming to this like vaguely haunted house, like thinking they're getting into one thing and it turns out to be something else altogether. And Dario Cueto is this very, you know, nefarious sort of Vink character from like Are You Afraid of the Dark almost. It's like running this sort of Shanghai operation, and it's very supernatural in that sense to it. So that is something I definitely appreciate about Lucha Underground, and in particular season one. This was a lot of fun to watch, and man, Aztec Warfare, the eliminations started coming like fast and furious right around I think when the crew started getting eliminated.
That was right before Big Rick came in, because he had just missed the crew, because I think
that's
they were
right,
still
yeah.
aligned at the time.
That's right, yeah.
And so he didn't have any of his backup.
Yeah, Bale got eliminated, I believe, fifth, and then Cortez followed shortly
Yeah, by
after
Puma,
him.
And then Mundo pinned Castro, like, right after.
Yeah, and then Mandel got eliminated by Big Rick right after that. And it was, it was some fast and furious eliminations. You know who was sort of like the Kane of this Aztec Warfare, and that he eliminated a lot of people but didn't get the win, was Chavo. Chavo, although he was using the chair, was eliminated in a lot of people, including Pentagon Jr., which made me sad. But he eliminated Superfly. He eliminated
Pentagon. Right after.
Yeah. And so Chavo, I thought, did really well in this Aztec Warfare. I mean, and he was a bigger, you know, more of a focal point, I guess, in the early going of Lucha Underground, you know, with the feud with Sexy Star and Blue Demon.
Well, I think it was important for somebody with name recognition like Chavo to take such a major point.
Yeah.
And then as some of the homegrown talent, or at least talent that's not as recognized here in the States, started to become bigger and more popular, a guy like Chavo could sort of fade away. It wasn't necessary anymore. It's kind of like how you know, Rey doesn't have that many matches. He's involved in storylines, but it's more of like as a supporting cast member. Not that he hasn't had some key moments, but
yeah,
it's not all about him. He's not the hero. It's not even like he's gone after the championship either, you know?
Yeah.
He doesn't need to.
Made me sad when Cuerno got eliminated right after he eliminated Drago. Yeah, he was showboating, and they got caught in the crucifix by Mundo. But let's jump to our final four, which was Johnny Mundo, Prince Puma, Sexy Star, and Mil Muertes. Just what did you think of the close in the final four of the match?
You know, you said close, and I'm thinking close. Was Sexy Star dressed as Miss Marvel?
Yes, she was, which I thought was awesome. I wish she would bring that
awesome.
Back.
I just like the idea of like the sexy feminist. So
yeah, nothing wrong with that.
I no nothing. Yeah, it was two of the biggest talents at the time, Puma and Mundo, Sexy Star, who was still really coming into her own, but she definitely had a presence. And then Mil Muertes, who's kind of like one of the big bads. You know, it either had to be him or Big Rick at the end, and I think Mil is more appropriate.
Yeah, absolutely. He
seems more unstoppable.
I had kind of forgotten how they got rid of Big Rick in this match. And what was
the double pin?
It was the double pin with Phoenix and Chavo that took out Big Rick. So I was thinking in my head, I was like, does Mil Muertes take out Big Rick here? Because that's kind of the only one that I see that would be able to, you know, do it one-on-one. They had that great moment in the Aztec Warfare was the two of them facing off, and Matt Stryker's like, I always wanted to say this. It's the irresistible force meeting the immovable object. And
Stryker, you're so awesome and predictable at the same time.
Yeah, it was one of those things that you know, it was akin to sort of Ultimate Warrior and Hulk Hogan meeting up in the Royal Rumble, or you know, a Hogan Andre type situation. It was very cool. But yeah, the final four was Mundo, Puma, Sexy Star, and Mil Muertes. I thought it went, especially for the time, exactly how it needed to go, with you know, Muertes taking out Sexy Star with the Reaper's Trident. Man, he got her.
He destroyed her.
Yeah,
he almost ripped her in half.
And then it took Puma and Mundo to both eliminate Muertes, which I thought was also very fitting because it kept Mil looking super strong. There was the great moment where Mundo accidentally kicked Katrina, which sort of led to the distraction that allowed Mil Muertes to be eliminated to begin with.
That's my why I love Lucha moment.
Is it? Now, why is that?
Yeah, because I know it's something that you love, and I like that it got kicked in the face.
Wow! You've been doing a lot of that this week.
This week was a twofer as far as why I love Lucha. Katrina saw a lot of action this week in the flashbacks.
Man, it took the double team by Mundo and Puma to eliminate Mil, which I thought was again fitting. And then it was who you knew it should come down to at this point in Lucha Underground's history: Johnny Mundo versus Prince Puma. And I mean, this really made Puma. He pulled out the victory, and he's the first ever Lucha Underground champion. Pretty awesome stuff. And it, like you said at the start of our review here, that just very historical for Lucha Underground, and getting the win over Mundo, who at the time, I do think it's important to remember that Johnny Mundo was the name, the biggest name that Lucha Underground had, at least in the United States, a part of this. So, and they weren't doing the predictable thing, which is to just put the belt right on him. And I appreciate that. They made a new star, at least for American audiences, in Prince Puma, and I think it was absolutely the right call. I mean, he's such a talented athlete and a great pro wrestler that it was the right call. Your thoughts on the ending, and, I mean, freaking Conan coming out afterwards, stuff like that. Like that I remember watching at the time being like, dude, this Conan guy, man, it's not sitting right with me that he's only coming out after he wins. I just don't trust him.
And what was he supposed to do, man? Was he supposed to fight the match for him, wipe his ass for him?
No. But coming off of, like, you know, like getting chewing Puma's ass out, even though Puma didn't do anything wrong, and then like he only chooses to show his face after he won. I was sort of sipping on what Vampiro was sipping on.
But Vampiro was saying a lot of what Conan was saying too, as far as you don't trust Mundo. Like, listening to Vampiro then do commentary for a Mundo match is hilarious.
Yeah, absolutely.
As far as, you know, he's like, I kind of like this guy now, but he's still a douchebag. You know, and that Prince Puma, stay away from this guy. He's bad news. Oh, he's only there looking out for himself. And then Stryker's like, well, you know, isn't like an independent 20-man match? Everyone's looking out for themselves. It's like, no, but it's still somehow Mundo's fault. And they did have that weird, uneasy alliance. They were friends, but, you know, they want the same thing. So they're going to be adversaries, too. Yeah. So, I mean, they had the mutual respect. They had the handshake at the end. Mundo was still someone who I would say is trustworthy because he definitely was still a face. But, I mean, yeah, only so much so. It's not like Conan was wrong. And then Conan ended up vindicating himself later in the season. I really thought he was setting Puma up to fall against Hernandez or something.
Yeah.
And when that didn't happen, I was like, okay, I guess we can trust Conan. He was just being harsh on him. It's all he had. He was like Mickey from Rocky.
Yeah, he was. But I still, like, until the Hernandez thing came to pass and he didn't betray him, that was kind of the moment for me, too. But well,
yeah, exactly. No, when Hernandez started acting weird and Conan had Puma's back, I was like, okay, Conan is legit. I mean, I couldn't think of another test Conan could pass at that point. Yeah.
It was just, I always in the back of my mind thought they maybe had a different idea for that, but
that's what I think too. Or maybe once again, it's just that kind of swerve. You know, it seems like the predictable move to give Mundo the title. It seems like the predictable move to have Puma being built up and working with Conan, and then Conan would betray him, and that's how Puma would gain his independence. As opposed to
Conan being murdered.
Conan was murdered by Emil Mortez,
which in hindsight is way better. Way better. I just didn't know that. It was like the Chappelle thing. I'm sorry. I didn't know you could do that, Lucha Underground. So like my eyes were opened as far as possibilities, as far as what could and could not happen in this world. I was like, oh, so you're just going to be straight murdering characters that, you know, people have
off characters.
Grown up with and everything like that. You know, dude, this guy was in my living room, like with doing like the Viva La Raza, like with the NWO colors on not too long ago. So sorry, I didn't think you were going to straight murder his ass.
I was a member of Wolfpack.
So what are you doing? But a couple notes. This, you mentioned Vampiro on commentary and talking about Mundo. I liked listening to Vampiro talk about Pentagon and liking what he was seeing in a certain aspect. But again, like I think you mentioned last week, sort of Pentagon still being that unfinished product and prone to making rookie mistakes, which he did again here. I thought that was...
Well, that's why he got bested by Chavo, isn't it? Didn't he trust Chavo?
Yes.
Yeah.
So I appreciated that. I thought that was good. And also Vampiro already... episode 9, season 1, not selling for Matt Stryker. I don't know if you picked up on that at the beginning.
Quotes.
Yeah, like right at the beginning, I forgot to write down what Stryker's quote was, but Vampiro's just like, man, if you keep talking like that, I'm not going to talk to you for the rest of the show.
What is the famous quote? It was about, he would rather die on his feet than live on his knees.
That's right. And
I'm wondering if Vampiro was thinking it was some sort of... glory hole blowjob joke.
I think Stryker was attributing it to Mundo, I think. And maybe Vampiro did not appreciate being attributed to Mundo, but I just thought
I guess it had to be Mundo standing up against Dario, right?
Yeah.
And which is why he didn't mind being drawn as number two. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but I appreciate that Vampiro just... So we were talking about how Vampiro still was selling last week, and then now episode 9, nope. It was over at this point.
I'll tell you, there is such a charm to season 1 that can never be recaptured because it's just such an unpolished product.
Yeah, and that's kind of the beauty of it.
Yeah, exactly, and that's why it's always going to be classic. And the relationship between Stryker and Vampiro, and I was noticing it in the second episode too, they still seem like strangers working together, as opposed to now they're friends, you know, and there's just this level of comfort and familiarity, which I as a viewer, I kind of prefer it the other way, but that can only last so long, you know?
Yeah, very true. There is that, and we talked about it in one of the episodes with where Tejano and Cage were in their best of five, and I sort of questioned, man, was that turnbuckle pad supposed to fall off? Like that raw nature... that sort of very unscripted feel and just, like you said, unpolished is something that it has such a power when you put it into the pro wrestling genre. And it definitely comes across so well in Lucha Underground season 1. So this has been a lot of fun. That was Aztec Warfare, the first episode this week in the double dose of Lucha Underground Greatest Hits. That was the 9th episode of season 1. Before we review Grave Consequences, which is the 19th episode of season 1 and part 2 of the Greatest Hits this week, let's take a quick little break and just let you know that we appreciate all you believers interacting with us, listening to the podcast, sharing the podcast. Please keep up what you're doing. If you can, subscribe to us, rate us, and review us on iTunes. It is the best thing you can do to help the podcast, other than word of mouth and just sharing it with your friends, which we encourage you to do. Really appreciate that. So, again, subscribe to us on iTunes and Audio Boom. Huge help to us if you rate and review us. And then on Twitter, follow us on Twitter at Lucha Lowdown. We definitely appreciate that. We love interacting with you when I can live tweet the episodes and everything like that. It's a lot of fun on there. So at Lucha Lowdown on Twitter. You can find us on Facebook. Email us, luchalowdown@gmail.com, if you want to get a hold of us that way. Love interacting with all you believers. It's been a lot of fun. We appreciate you. And now, back to the rest of this Greatest Hits recap. Grave Consequences. This is an episode that I knew that they would have to do when they started talking about all these Greatest Hits and everything like that, because the first Grave Consequences match is one of the most highly thought of Lucha Underground main events they've done. I think it tops most people's lists as far as best matches in Lucha Underground history, or certainly is on most everybody's list, if not at the very top. So I was not surprised to see this pop up early on. Overall, what did you think of the show?
I liked it because the only thing I remembered from it was the Grave Consequences match. And we mentioned him in the previous episode. I enjoyed the Big Rick match against the Crew.
Yeah, and so we got a few things in this episode. We got the third match of the best of five between Drago and Aerostar, which is another pairing in Lucha Underground that you and I find ourselves on opposite sides of a civil war, even though we both like both competitors, or at least I do.
I do too. I prefer Aerostar, you prefer Drago.
Yeah.
But, I mean, this one isn't so much a rivalry or anything because of their relationship as well. I mean, it's interesting. Whenever I see them, whether it was the live event or this best of series, and I think they've even had some other matches, it really just seems like such an exhibition of Lucha Libre.
Yeah.
And they're both so equally talented and kind of what you expect that type of fighting style to be. Every match is entertaining with the two of them. So, I mean, this one was no exception. It's always fun. I almost feel like I'm starting to take them for granted because every match they do, I like.
They have a tremendous natural chemistry with one another.
They do. That's why they constantly have to pair them up.
Yeah, and I think it is because they are so, I mean, they are so classic Lucha Libre oriented and stuff like that. It's just fun watching them do their thing. They both have these great off-the-wall characters. Again, when I was explaining what Lucha Underground is to a coworker today, I was like, you know, but it's like, it's not just like regular pro wrestling. Like, there's so much more supernatural stuff. Like, this guy Drago, he literally has the soul of a dragon within him. And there's this guy Aerostar, who's this time traveling space guy.
Like, yeah, dude, he's an intergalactic star hopper. Yeah, you know, it's like, it's, when you think about it,
it's awesome. And the best of five was for one of the, not the first, but one of the early unique opportunities. That was granted, which was one of the unique opportunity that came out of this, which was Drago's title shot, but if he lost, he would be banished, is one of my favorite season one storylines. And what I thought was the peak of Drago was his interactions with Dario and everything like going on with that. I thought it was Drago pretty much at his coolest and at his most, likable and most, you know, like, total, you know, he got banished and then he was wanting to come back and he was, I just thought it was his coolest story arc that we got from Drago, and it was season one and it came out of this really good best of five series. And this was the third match. And I don't know if you caught this, someone laughing very loudly during one of the quiet parts of the match. Did you hear that?
Yeah, it sounded maniacal, and for a second I thought it was supposed to be Dario, and then no, it was just somebody next to a mic or something.
I had to rewind it because I thought it was Vampiro like talking to somebody off mic, but his mic was still on, but it was not.
That was weird.
Yeah, it was very weird, but again,
season one, bro.
Anything can happen. One. Anything, still working out some of the bugs, but it was great. Good match. Aerostar picked up the win. I don't think anything. Anything stand out to you about that? I mean, I should point out to the listeners that Drago would eventually win the final two and the best of five overall. Your thoughts on that?
I wish he stayed banished.
You're an ass. You're an ass.
Well, now he's a dragon slave. So what do you think of that?
He is. I was editing last week's episode and just listening to the theory about, God, they got to get King Cuerno on the case, man. Like, that's
the only one who can track them.
That's got to be the thing to do. It makes so much sense. And listening
and
to
his past relationship with Drago would be outstanding.
Listening to your excitement about it, like, I'm going to be disappointed, I think, if they don't do that.
Why won't they just let us write the show?
Yeah.
We got a lot of ideas.
We do. And one of us doesn't look at spoilers.
I don't look at them. They come to me.
Lies.
It was on their Facebook page. I can't even be a fan of theirs anymore.
No, you're a fan of our podcast. All right.
With the millions.
And millions.
I mean, I haven't looked at our latest numbers, but I assume it's somewhere in the millions.
Yeah, absolutely. Like okay. 10 figures. From that best of five match, we got a promo that I definitely remember very well, which is one of the Conan chess promos that he did with Prince Puma. And
because he has to train his mind as well as his body.
Yeah, I remember, though, what I remember most about it is... Or I guess not what I remember most, but what I'm hazy on remembering, at least what triggered my head, is like, so it's like this Conan gets his revenge is what happens like at the end. At the very end of the... Did he ever get his revenge, though? I don't think he did.
Puma ended up defeating Cage, but I don't think to the point where like Conan like kicked the crap out of Cage. Yeah, Cage really got the crap kicked out of him. I think he lost the match, you know?
Yeah, that's what I remember too. I don't think Conan really sort of got this payoff here, which...
Well, it was, like they said, it was a Boyle Heights street fight, so you know it got dirty, but as far as, listen, the only time I ever think Cage got the crap kicked out of him was that match against Tejano.
Yeah.
That's it. Other than that, I think Cage just sometimes loses.
But the chess promo is definitely one that I remember very well from season one.
I wanted to smack Conan in the head. Chess is sort of like war. It's like, oh, really?
Like lucha.
You dumbass.
I like the multiple shots, too. It's like, well, no, I think you just already took the king. Isn't the match over? And then they're like, you keep playing?
And yeah, Conan, you don't actually take it. You just put him into a position where he can't escape.
No, he takes it, bro. Kings to Conan. King
Conan. Can't wait.
Yep. It was it was definitely one of those memorable promos from season one. And keep in mind, this is back when they weren't letting Puma talk. So
no, he was only allowed to nod his head.
Yep. From there, we got Big Rick versus the crew in a 1-on-3 elimination handicap match.
Like there was like a bull against a bunch of bulldogs or something.
It was. I liked that they were talking about like how it was like a prison fight, and it was. It definitely felt that
showers.
Way. Yeah, it definitely felt that way, and just how they had to attack him and everything. I liked Stryker putting over the fact that he was blind.
That was a racist analogy based on the characters in the match.
Well, I mean, it's the crew and Big Rick, both with seedy ties.
All nothing but street fighters and like gang members and stuff. That's what they claim to be.
Crew, literal gang members.
Yeah, that's true.
So what did you like so much about this match?
What I liked about it was, well, first off, one funny thing was, because they mentioned it a few times, Stryker continually calling Big Rick a pious man because he makes one biblical quote.
Oh, my God. I thought that was hilarious, too. It's like a pious man, and he's quoting the Old Testament, which is something that Jesus Christ then rejected.
Yeah, exactly. And also, it's like, if he's a pious man, wouldn't that mean, like, he finds forgiveness in his heart and moves away from all the...
Eye for an eye!
Also, yeah, I mean... Is he even quoting the Bible at this point, or is he just literally saying what's happened to him? He had his eye removed by a cigar, and now he's trying to exact revenge against these men.
First of all, eye for an eye comes from Hammurabi's code, and it's referenced in the Bible, and I think most notably when Jesus says, you know, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, like, and is rejecting that as far as being an acceptable... You know, proposition.
People don't remember that part. They only remember the beginning. Lose an eye, you get an eye, or something like that.
There's the turn the other cheek promo. It's like second most famous promo behind Dusty Rhodes' Hard Times. So, you know, people should remember it.
But yeah, he's a pious man. It's like, what are you talking about? He's just a giant thug. And Big Rick wasn't even so much a good guy. It was just that he was
betrayed.
Dario and them. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, I definitely noted that too. I was like, pious man, like, it's like, I don't
know. Us and Vampiro all scratching our heads.
Yeah,
we didn't know what
that's right. Because Vampiro called him out on his shenanigans for that one too. But what else did you
like? Sometimes it's good that Vampiro doesn't sell for him. Oh well, what I liked about it was, and I was telling you about this before the show. Yes, I hate the crew. I continue to. I don't like any of those characters, but at the same time, that's what they're designed there for. I'm not supposed to be a fan of them. I do appreciate their fighting style. I like their underhandedness. It's good to have toadies like that. You need to have that level of heel.
Yeah.
And well, so go ahead.
No, and like you also said, and I agree, is that they filled their role perfectly. And the other, I think, interesting thing about Lucha Underground that makes them even more acceptable in that role, the whole toady thing, is that their failure has consequences. And that is something that we are not used to. Honestly, in most works of, you know, serial fiction that we follow, like comic books and stuff like that, is that even the ineptitude does not get punished properly. But in Lucha Underground, Bale got straight up murdered. Mr. Cisco gets straight up murdered. Cortez, when he's found to be a rat, is getting continually broken. So that there are these consequences throughout, and so their toadiness is, to me, more appreciated because, like you said, we're not supposed to like them. They are this seedy little gang, and when they screw up, Dario and whomever, you know, calls them on it, and they pay the price.
Same with basically our little skeleton warriors and how they continue to fail. Yeah, Lucha Underground and like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles are the only two works of fiction where failure is not tolerated on the bad guy's side.
Yeah,
and I appreciate it.
I absolutely appreciate it. And Big Rick was making short work of the crew here.
And rightly so.
Yeah, and rightly so. And it came down to just Mr. Cisco. And I appreciated the fact that he just bailed. I think out of, no pun intended.
He should have,
absolutely. But I also think the thing about Mr. Cisco of the crew, even though he is the one that burnt out Big Rick's eye, is that he is the most sympathetic member of the crew. And like even Vampire alluding to it, it's like that was him trying to, you know, essentially earn his stripes.
Yeah.
And he just doesn't seem like out of everyone. Like, he seems like he belongs the least. I mean, you remember the segments with Joey Ryan, Cortez, and Mr. Yeah. Cisco. It's just like, dude, this guy's clearly a small-time criminal that's gotten mixed up with some bigger fish, you know?
I think that's a great observation. Yeah, he's kind of like the softest, because Bale apparently was, like, the most vicious. And then, Cortez, we know, is actually an undercover cop. And was also supposed to be, like, technically the most skilled of the three as far as fighting goes. Yeah, I think Mr. Cisco was a guy who didn't really have his place, and so just he was the good soldier and did what he was supposed to do, as long as that lasted.
Yep.
And then I totally forgot that Sexy Star even had an alliance with Big Rick. They weren't friends the way she's friends with the Mac. It was just that they both hated the crew. So, when she basically forces Cisco back into the ring, I loved it.
I liked the whoop that trick chant that came out of that, too. That was great. So Big Rick emphatically prevailed here. And that takes us to Grave Consequences and one of the greatest main events in Lucha Underground history, in my opinion. Mill was flying from the start in this. Just what did you think overall of this match?
Well, dude, you know, it starts at the very beginning, man. It's, I don't want to sound fruity, but it's the pageantry, you know, it's the presentation.
Absolutely.
And the way the coffin came out and everyone in costume and, you know, how solemn they're making it. Looking back and seeing Katrina with Phoenix and then, almost like a Phoenix dark, wondering if she was having some sort of effect on him. Because, I mean, you know, we didn't know. We didn't know what was going on at the time.
Yeah.
And how the story could have progressed if they had kept him with Katrina longer or something like that. That maybe that's just what she does. She just poisons what she touches.
I completely agree with you about the pageantry of it and that whole aspect, the cultural aspect of it, that they are, you know, bringing out the people in the Dia de la Muertes, you know, face paint and everything like that. And all of that. How solemn it was,
it more significant, it important.
Vamp was talking about how, like, you know, the Day of the Dead means this thing for, you know, most people, but there are, you know, if you mess with witchcraft, you know, I don't know what to tell you kind of deal. Like, all of that just tied it into it made it so much better than, say, like, just a casket match in other promotions or something like that.
Shots fired.
I'm not trying to fire any shots. It's just, it was... You know, they went the extra mile to have it make more sense why they were doing it. And it, like, I just, it, like you said, it was the sizzle that you need to go with that steak, and it was perfect. But what did you think of the match?
Well, I like the match, but one more thing about Vampiro was early on, he also mentions that, hey, I've been wrapped up in vampire cults for most of my life. And then he kind of rambles a little bit about things being dark, and he goes, well, you know what I mean. No, Vampiro, I don't know what you mean, because I don't know what it's like to be wrapped up in vampire cults. And it's like, I don't know what you mean. Stryker doesn't want to know what you mean. I'm pretty damn sure you don't know what he means either, James. Vampiro has very unique life experiences that are hard to relate to.
I think your brother might know what he means.
Yeah, my brother knows. My brother's the only person who can relate to Vampiro. I need that explained to me a little bit more, Vampiro. You can't just check out and then go back to the match.
I love that about him, though.
No, he's outstanding, and it's just so much fun to listen to the two of them do their commentary together. They're my favorite commentary team.
Yeah, I agree.
First time in a long time I'm enjoying commentary somewhere.
I really appreciated first of all, before I get into that, I loved Phoenix's outfit. I think this was his coolest, most Phoenix-like outfit. I wish he would wear this more. I know it's like they were kind of putting over the fact, oh, we've never seen him wear black before, but I like the black with the fire because it is like a Phoenix rising from the ashes kind of look. So I wish he would bring it back, because it's a shame this mask gets completely destroyed.
No, simple of hope. His mask always gets destroyed going against Mil Muertes. Like, it's ridiculous how much his mask gets ripped off. I know what Phoenix looks like.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
that's
I know.
Weird to me.
Well, and that, I was thinking about that during the match, too. It's like, yes, Mil Muertes destroys it every time, and like I'm totally cool with it. I think it's a great visual. However, when somebody does it to Mil Muertes, I hate it. I'm like, I feel like
you do hate that.
I fucking hate it.
Well, because Phoenix is human and Mil Muertes isn't.
Exactly.
You know?
He's
their phenom. He's the Mexican phenom.
Yes, that's exactly how I feel. That's like, dude, you can't break this, dude. There's nothing underneath that mask as far as I'm concerned. Like,
that's true. It's just black.
It's, yeah, it's just, you know, he's a ghoul. I hate having that shattered for me on the flip side, but like when Mil does it,
how
like,
do you feel when he's wearing a suit?
I'm fine with him wearing a suit. You know?
Okay.
It's just nothing underneath the mask, though. It's just okay. Like he's like the headless horseman or like Scorpion. It's just either a skull or nothing. It's just I conversely don't like it when it gets done to him. But I love the brutality that Mil brings to this. The early on, like when he busts open Phoenix and the blood spit after like biting him and everything like that. I mean, this is incredibly brutal, on par with the Cerro Miedo match with Vampiro and Pentagon.
Dude, he slammed him onto the commentary table like immediately. I don't even think they got into the ring yet.
Yeah, and you just hear the oh shit.
Yeah. Damn right, oh shit.
Yeah, they were coming fast and furious right from the start. And again, yeah, Katrina at this point has aligned with Phoenix.
Somebody likes to see their ex with a new guy.
Dude, you know, seriously.
Then Mil Muertes is like him?
Yeah. Well,
beat the crap. How many times was he beating the crap out of him and then looking at her?
You know,
I sucked blood out of your new boyfriend's face.
It's like together maybe they could provide Katrina with what I give Katrina, you know, because then you have the 1,000 lives and 1,000 deaths. It's the eternal struggle that I think that she really likes, much like myself. Oh, where's that damn Ouija board? So at this point, yes, Katrina has aligned herself, so to speak, with Phoenix. I never bought that for a second, but
I don't know. I didn't like it either.
Yeah,
she seemed unsure of herself.
I appreciated it storyline wise, but I was like, nah, you gotta be with Mil. But this was, again, it was such a brutal affair. I love that Mil's sort of signature weapon is undoing the turnbuckle hook and using that, because that thing is vicious. And it's such a unique weapon, and I mean, it comes directly from the ring. And so when he busts that out on special occasions, I really enjoy that. And this was one of the most special of occasions. Grave Consequences won, and just some of the things they did in this match. The belly-to-belly overhead onto the casket in the corner is one that stands out to me. And then what also stands out is when Phoenix started flying all around the temple, like the moonsault, the senton, everything was just crazy.
Well, he's a Phoenix, dude.
Mil and Phoenix, they busted their asses in this match and provided one of the most memorable Lucha Underground main events here in season 1, Grave Consequences. It is one that is bittersweet for me because I love the match, but I love Mil Muertes. I love Phoenix, but I mean, I'm such a Mil guy. So I think the finish is great because we get Katrina getting accidentally clotheslined by Mil. Mil showing some remorse or humanity, as Matt Stryker says. And then
his weakness.
Yeah, that provides. I get it, man. Like no hard feelings, Mil. I get it. But then that provides the opening for Phoenix to maybe get back more in control. And I just enjoyed the storytelling at the end that it is nobody opened the casket and nobody closed the casket other than Katrina in this match. And it was her, as we had find out later on, it was her purpose all along to do that. I love how she like started to close it and then she remembered she licked the stone and tossed it in there. She's like, what the hell does this even mean? I mean, at this point, and you're watching Lucha Underground, it's like, what is happening? And, like, is he dead? Like, we never gonna see. It's just all these freaking things, like, that were so new at the time where we don't know where Lucha Underground's gonna go. And then this served such a great purpose down the road for bringing back the rebooted, more powerful Mil Muertes. Just awesome stuff.
Yeah, you got to remember the old Lucha Underground quote, no one stays dead except for King Cuerno.
So, and Gwen Stacy still.
Yeah. And Big Rick.
Yeah.
I know. Like we said, you know, it's the charm of season one that we're really starting to just get to understand what this is, what the story is, who these characters are, what their abilities are. I mean, yeah, Mil Muertes could have been killed right there. You know, I mean, that would have been a very final way to do things. I'm glad that wasn't the case, because even though I'm not the biggest Mil Muertes fan, I appreciate him for what he is.
Yeah.
And I also prefer Katrina with him, too.
Yeah. Well,
but, yeah, I mean, it was great.
I will tell you this, that I popped and marked out when they first did the vignette. I think it was to close one of the episodes, like, after the credits or whatever, with Katrina with the Mil casket and everything like that, and essentially announcing that he'd be coming back and his eyes open and everything like that. It was awesome. So this was a great moment for Phoenix too. And I just watching him, it's just like, man, like, you know, no matter what happens with Lucha Underground, if Phoenix is your top babyface, you are in good stead. Like he is a terrific performer and he is definitely very relatable to the crowd. They get behind him and God, he took an ass whipping in this match, and it was a phenomenal match.
Yeah, I was thinking of that while watching the match too. I really like his feud with Mil Muertes, but yeah, the contrast of how he matches up against him versus, let's say, Prince Puma, where with Puma, you know, he almost just trades it blow for blow against Mil Muertes. I wouldn't say that he's as strong, but he definitely can hold his own. Where with Phoenix, it really is more of the avoid and then pick your spots type match when he goes against him as far as the strategy. And I mean, you know, there's always a charm to that. Yeah, you're always going to root for that underdog and you appreciate it. I like both ways and I love Prince Puma, but I mean, yeah, the Phoenix Mil Muertes feud is the best.
Yeah. And I only say that just
And I like Mil Muertes where he's unstoppable, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
And it's just that force of nature.
And I think it tells such a great story in that regard. I only say that because you know, with what we talked about with Pentagon and, like, you know, I haven't looked at exactly what Prince Puma's future is. I don't know. I know he's Ricochet other places and things like that. I've heard both sides as far as encouraging and discouraging as far as what his future might be with Lucha Underground. But my point is to say is this, is when I was at that that event at Paley Fest down in L.A., the first luchador that they knew they were going to bring into Lucha Underground to sort of help build around was Phoenix, and I think it is a great call, and I still think he can be a cornerstone whenever they want him to be of the promotion. He's awesome, and it was good just to see this was the Phoenix really taking flight here in season one, and I loved it. So great match, great episode, fun going down memory lane with Lucha Underground. So next week, as they continue on with their greatest hits, it is going to be episode 24, Trios Champions. From season one, and then episode 29, Fight to the Death. So those are coming next week, which we will review for you. But with that, that is going to do it for us here at Lucha Lowdown for this week. For Jeff Budd, I'm James Kincaid. Good night, everybody.